Welcome to Odyssey. We talk about ancient and modern mysteries all across the globe. I'm your host, Mike S. And we have a very exciting show tonight with a couple of dynamic guests. Calling in from Hawaii, we have William Brown. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be on the show.
Okay, William. Now, there's a big event coming up. It's called Contact in the Desert, and you are one of the speakers. Why don't you describe Contact in the Desert in August, please?
So it's going to be an amazing event. I'm just really excited about this. I'm sure that anybody who's familiar with it knows that there's an amazing lineup, really spectacular researchers and investigators, many of whom I've been personally following for years. So for myself, it's going to be an honor and the privilege to get to meet many of these individuals. Graham Hancock, Stephen Greer, David Wilcox, William Henry, David Sarita, and of course, Michael Tellinger, just to name a few. I mean, it's a fantastic lineup of presenters.
And Giorgio Tsoukalos from Ancient Aliens on the History Channel is going to be there as well.
Yes. He was a recently confirmed addition, I believe.
Now, this is going to be out in the desert in Joshua Tree, California, August 9th to 11th. So we may have some UFO skywatches. What do you think?
Oh, I hope so. You know, I'm not too familiar with the area as far as the amount of UFO activity, but I have noticed from my own kind of observations of ships appearing and even interacting with observers that it does very much depend on who is there. There's kind of a resonance that is set up, and if there's a frequency match, I think that there's a good possibility of drawing in visitors, so to speak.
Well, we're going to have a lot of light workers there, and one of them has a show on this station. His name is James Gilliland, and he's been in contact with UFOs for years at his ranch. And he's conducting a skywatch. So if there's ever a good chance of contact with Stephen Greer and James Gilliland on a skywatch at night in the desert, I think this would be it.
I think I'd be more amazed not to see some activity, actually, with those two individuals.
Well, I keep using the word Woodstock because if you know rock and roll, there was one time and place where they all came together, Janis Joplin and The Who and Jimi Hendrix. And this kind of usually doesn't happen. I go to a lot of these conferences, and usually you get two or three speakers, but everybody's showing up out in the desert this time. And Graham Hancock will be on Skype, but still, the whole gang's going to be there. So it's a special event.
Yeah, and you know, I think that it really is a matter of timing. I think that we've kind of passed that 2012 threshold, and we're starting our kind of journey into this new vibration. And I think that this is the time when we're all pulling together. We're coming together at this time to, you know, bring in all of our strengths, you know, and the entire community is really coming together to kind of amplify, you know, this vibration, which is, you know, it's perspectives and thoughts, new and better ways of doing things. And, you know, this is, I think, indicative of that energy.
Right. So I've talked to you briefly, and you have been to South Africa, and there are some ancient ruins there. And one is called Adam's Calendar. Why don't you describe that ancient ruin in South Africa?
So it was another really phenomenal experience that I got to partake in visiting Adam's Calendar with Michael Tellinger. And they had actually, the government had just closed it down, had just shut it off to the public. And we decided we were going to do a Occupy Adam's Calendar. we were going to go in anyways to kind of claim the area for the public, you know, it's a human heritage site, and the, you know, information that's there is too valuable to be cordoned off and blacked out or shut off from the public.
Michael Challenger believes the Anunnaki created this, so why don't you kind of describe what it is?
So there's an arrangement of monolithic stones, and megalithic stones. These stones are of a particular type that they don't actually occur in the surrounding area, so they were brought in from a great distance. And it's at the top of a cliff, essentially, at the top of a pretty large hilltop overlooking a cliff. So it would be very difficult to imagine how, I don't want to say the word primitive, but ancient humans would have brought those stones to that place and then arranged them in such a intricate or purposeful manner. It is suggestive of advanced technology being used in order to build this site. And with the scientific measurements that's been done, there are, they say, anomalous magnetic and geomagnetic activity at the sites that they've been able to actually record, and that this is a functional site. It's doing something. So
right now, Now, according to Michael Tellinger, he has a book called Adam's Calendar, so people can buy that and see all the pictures. But he believes there's a pyramid right below it.
So overlooking this cliff, you can see what they look like mountains, small mountains, or hills. Maybe mountains are too big of a description for them. But I believe that they have shown that there's particular alignment and geometric aspects of these structures that suggests they could be actual pyramids. And I think that if there could be investigation of that using ground-penetrating radar or even excavations, physical excavations, and if that were discovered or confirmed to be true, this would make it one of the most, I think, spectacular sites on Earth.
Right. Now, some of the stones on the calendar correspond to star systems like Orion. Isn't that correct?
You can show, I believe that they have shown alignments with the constellations, You know, myself, I'm not too actually informed about that those aspects. You know, I have heard about the north-south alignment of the area and how actually it shifted off a little bit, which of alignment to true north, which actually shows or suggests the antiquity of this site, being that it's actually there's been tectonic movement since it was built.
Absolutely. So Michael Tellinger is the main researcher, and he will also be at Contact in the Desert on this particular topic. Now, you're calling in from Hawaii. Why don't you tell us, are there any ancient alien sites out of Hawaii, ancient ruins?
Yeah, so, you know, the Hawaiian mythos is actually fairly rich in ancient mysteries. I mean, not only visitors from outer space, their own mythology is that, or creation story, perhaps I should say, is that they came to Earth in stellar canoes or spaceships from the Pleiades, the Pleiadian star system. Of course, they view it more as the soul's journey from that star system to Earth. Now, there's a particular site on the Big Island of Hawaii, which, as the creation story goes, is actually the site where the first man and woman emerged on the Earth, kind of like the proverbial Adam and Eve. Now, this site,
sure.
I've seen it. I've been in the area. It's actually at the easternmost location of Hawaii. And it's a large crater. It's a very ancient crater. It's actually completely covered with vegetation, unlike many of the newer craters. And in the crater, at the center, there's a lake. And as the story goes, this is where the first man and woman emerged onto Earth. It was the Garden of Eden. Now,
fascinating.
I have a excuse me?
Oh, go ahead. Oh, fascinating.
Well, so I have a pretty brilliant researcher friend who lives on that island. He actually runs the Sirius Institute. And he was telling me of reports, credible reports that he'd received that there is actually a pyramid on this crater. Now, it's you can't see it from the air or the ground because the area is so densely covered with vegetation. And it's actually, the area is private property, so you can only go there under guided permission, kind of guided tour of the area. And it's the man who owns the land, the crater, in fact, who was telling him about this pyramid. And this is something that, if we know anything about the conventional textbook history of Hawaiian culture, there certainly shouldn't be any pyramids here.
No, of course not. That's a fascinating topic to explore more. Now, when I did my second movie and I researched Hawaii, I learned about an ancient race of little people who were about 3 feet tall, and they were excellent sailors, supposedly from Lemuria you know, the Atlantis of the Pacific Ocean was Lemuria. Have you read into or learned anything about the Menihun, the little people?
Well, I haven't, but I do know that them just from it's kind of popular culture here. You know, there's a water bottle company, bottled water, and the logo is the Menihun, you know, on there. So I actually, though, personally, I don't know much about the story of them. You know, I have heard of many other types of cultures or even species of people that were in contact with the Native Hawaiians, you know, but and many of which actually some even present day Hawaiians take very seriously the stories of. But you know, one thing I can speak on though is the idea of Lemuria.
Sure.
And it's quite possible that Hawaii is the location of ancient Lemuria. And there's good reason to suspect this is so. I believe that present-day Hawaii is actually just the tip-top of this kind of the mountains, the top of the mountains of a kind of continental plate. Now, it's actually not too controversial to posit that there was much more landmass here in a not too distant past with the melting of the ice caps. A great deal of the landmass here was probably submerged, so the sea levels could have been anywhere from 100 to 200 feet lower, as well as the potential that the hot spot underneath the landmass, the plume of magma that is creating the Hawaiian Islands, is subsiding. And so as it diminishes in its upward pressure, the land actually sinks underneath it. So, you know, it was kind of like a blister, so to speak, pushing up on the Earth's crust, actually elevating this area. So there could have, at one point, been a pretty sizable, almost continental landmass in this area.
Right. If I can just throw in one little thing, I live in California, and there's a theory among the Rosicrucians that the Lemurians migrated to Mount Shasta when Lemuria sunk. So some might have gone to Hawaii, and some might have gone to Mount Shasta. But that's some interesting research from the Rosicrucians.
Yeah. Personally, I think that many of the South American tribes, especially, as the precursors of the Incan culture, came from this area, not Lemuria, quite possibly.
We just have a couple of minutes. Give us your topic for Contact in the Desert. What will you be speaking on?
So the title is The Living Matrix. And this is really speaking to the perspective or the idea that the universe is actually permeated by a what you could call living, sentient network, a communication system that links everything and everyone together across space and across time, even. and that all our notions of separation are really only virtual, that they're only an illusion, in a sense. I'll be showing how this is what modern-day advanced science is showing. This isn't really just a notion that popped out of thin air. In The Living Matrix, I'll be focusing primarily on the DNA molecule, the known hereditary material of the biological organism, and I'll be showing how the notion, again, of the light body of humans as multidimensional beings, that scientifically speaking, this is literal. It's not figurative, and it's not metaphysical. This is, in the realest sense of the word, the literal description of not only biological organisms, but human beings in particular. This is how we function, certainly at the molecular level.
Can you, William, give us your website and the information so people can check out your website?
Sure. Definitely, sure. So my website URL is williambrownscienceoflife.com, and that's all one word. So my full name, scienceoflife.com, and a lot of this information is presented there. And then,
Contact in the Desert. We'll be seeing you on August 9th through 11th.
Yes.
All right, William, thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us on the Odyssey. We'll see you in a couple weeks in the desert. Thank you, William.
Excellent. I'll see you then. Bye. Aloha.
Bye-bye. Aloha from Hawaii. Thank you, William Brown. Okay, we have a few minutes here, and we're going to talk about BBS news headlines, and then a researcher from Colorado is coming on at 9:30, and that's a friend of mine named Aaron. So that'll be the second half of the show. So it's exciting, big event, big Woodstock event, Contact in the Desert, and you can just type those words into a search engine and check out all of the speakers, because there's many more who we did not even mention. This is about 20 speakers. And I'm sorry there was a little delay. He's in Hawaii. I'm in California. Sorry, I couldn't quite hear him. And so sorry for that little choppiness. But anyway, we have a news headline service on BBS Radio. And if you scroll down to the middle of the webpage, it will say TNT News, like dynamite, TNT. And the news is dynamite because we have, we're locked in a matrix, in a prison, where we're not allowed to get information. And even if you talk to friends in other countries, like Europe and Asia, there's many stories that break in other countries that we don't get here in the United States. And it kind of started to change. There was a tipping point that occurred right around the end of Clinton's presidency, 1999, right around then, because the internet was really coming on strong. And what happened was, you know, he had an affair with Monica Lewinsky. But guess what? The news networks were not going to tell you that. They were not going to give you that story. Even the conservative ones, that's why there really is no Republican, Democrat, right, left. Even Fox, they weren't going to give it to you. But the internet broke the story. Matt Drudge broke it, big headlines, and they were forced to go against the old boy network and whoever's in the White House is part of the old boy network, and they were forced to report on it, and he was impeached. He was caught lying, and that was in 1999. That was 14 years ago. So that was a tipping point. That was a break in the dam. And since then, now we have all kinds of internet radio and podcasts and websites, and very few people actually are kind of hanging around for 6 o'clock news, turning on their TV. the main networks are still playing games. NBC doctored the Zimmerman tape as part of that trial. And you can look into that, but they spliced together his words so it made him appear one way when, you know, they edited the tape and it inflamed people. So the major networks are still twisting the news, and that's why you need to find alternative sources. And TNT News is great. InfoWars is great with Alex Jones. Rents is great. Jeff Rents, RENSE.com. I go to BeforeIt'sNews.com. I love that site. And you have to use discretion because you're the editor now. You know, you pull up these sites, there's 50 stories on the page. You're the editor. It's your job to use discretion and check it out. And we have the power now. So that's a little bit of the history of the media recently. But just so you know, there's only 6 large companies controlling the major major networks at the moment. Only 6. Maybe next year there will be 5 and then 4. You know, there's ABC, Disney, and there's Viacom, and NBC, which is owned by General Electric. And a lot of these companies are making manufacturing weapons, and yet they're reporting on the war. It's a conflict of interest. It's the military-industrial complex. And that's what Eisenhower warned us about in 1961 when he left office. He said, beware the military-industrial complex. The media and government and business and the military are all going to be locked together, and that's a pretty powerful juggernaut. They can put what they want on television, and that's going to influence public opinion. Let me give you one more example. When we got involved in the Gulf War, what was the tipping point was a girl came on TV and she said, oh my God, they're killing babies. They're going into the incubators and they're killing the babies. We have to go to war. And it turned out later that she was an actress and that this was a script. And this, she was the daughter of one of the ambassadors in the Middle East. And it was a staged event to inflame Americans and freak us out, okay, and say that we have to go to war. So you can look that up yourself, how the Gulf War was triggered by this event of this actress. And now we're going to switch gears here and talk to Colorado Aaron. Are you there?
Yeah, Mike, I'm here. How are y'all doing?
Oh, great. Aaron's a fellow researcher. I got involved with you in the 9/11 truth movement, right? And we're still going strong with that, aren't we?
We sure are, yeah. We met there at the Living Temple in Huntington Beach. What a wonderful place that was involved definitely in my awakening back in 2004. He sold DVDs such as Alex Jones's 9/11, The Road to Tyranny. And that was actually the film that woke me up, and it was bought right there from Robin.
And that's a store that has raw foods, and this all ties together. 9/11 Truth ties exactly into raw foods, you know, and not genetically modified foods. It's all connected, don't you believe?
You know, it's become so apparent to me that it's all interconnected. It's all hidden knowledge, or what's been known as the occult, and it is the difference between thriving in this life and dying, you know, both spiritually, physically, on every level.
Yeah, I want to ask you, I know you're in the corporate world. How do you get out alternative messages and not get fired or ostracized? How do you balance that?
You know, I look at it kind of like you fire and you forget. You know, you don't dwell on the people that don't, you know, that aren't really into your message. You just kind of try to plant a seed, you know, water it if you can, but if all you can do is plant a seed and leave a message with somebody in one way or another and move on, then that's what you can do. But I've had great success with DVDs, you know, burning DVDs. they're inexpensive. They're much more effective than, say, a conversation, because people feel like you're showing off. I mean, if the bottom line is, I've been in sales since I was 22, and I'm 32 now. So for 10 years, I've had the profession of trying to move people forward to take action. And really, I'm trying to get them to take their money and move it towards whatever product I'm selling. Now, you know, in my older age here, if we want to call it that, you know, I believe selling things that are good for them is a good idea. But, you know, when you're 22, 23, 24 years old out of college with big student loans, you know, you'll sell somebody in a mortgage or a whatever, anything that you, when you're not awake, you just go to work, and if your boss makes big money, you just do what he tells you to. But as you get older, you learn to have a more symbiotic relationship with the customer where you're really looking out for their best interests, you know?
You know, it's funny you say that, because I worked in the medical field, and I would see these young 23-year-olds, really good-looking men and women, going into doctor's offices and pushing drugs. And I'll bet you they had a lot of student loans, and they just don't care. They're just not evolved yet. And they're just making a ton of money and get their first condo or apartment and having vacations and having fun.
Exactly, and that's the youth. You know, you know, a 16-year-old just wants to get out in front of the Friday Night Lights and play football, or 16-year-old just wants to date with that girl or guy or whatever. And it's the same thing. It's just short-term thinking. You don't really understand how your actions affect others, and a lot of it feels, when you look back, at kind of like punching yourself in the face. I mean, if you do something that hurts somebody else, you're hurting yourself. You know, we're all one in this human race. With, you know, where I draw the line, obviously, is self-defense. You know, self-defense is not like if somebody's trying to steal something I've got or trying to hurt somebody that's close to me or myself. You know, I obviously draw the line there, and now they become a serious enemy at that moment. But I don't hate them. They're just misinformed, and, you know, I have to take care of myself and my own. But there's a big difference between hating somebody and just understanding that in that moment you have to love yourself and take care of yourself. So I know we're getting
right,
a little
now,
off track
back to
what I'm talking about.
No, yeah. No, but back to burning DVDs, what a lot of people need to know is a lot of the DVDs in our field are copyright free. Like Thrive, which apparently 40 million people have now seen Thrive, is copyright free at this point. And Alex Jones, most of his films are copyright free, so you can burn them and share them with other people.
Exactly, and that's the beauty of it, is that these filmmakers want the message out first. You know, there's not... Most people in this movement, especially the 9/11 truth movement, are not trying to get rich. They are trying to win. And the only way that their children are going to have a future is if we get this message out. And, I mean, the 9/11 truth movement is this simple. We've got two planes and three towers. So I do not understand. It's that simple. If anybody out there wants to do mental cartwheels as a way to justify the national story and somehow say that somehow two planes brought down three towers.
Thank you.
Then go ahead and, yeah, I own the 9/11 Commission Report. You buy that thick book, you buy the book at Barnes & Noble, you go buy the 9/11 Commission Report, and you will not even find a mention whatsoever of this third tower that fell, other than a very small paragraph that just mentions something called the Solomon Brothers Building. But it does not say that it collapsed at 5:20 p.m. that day. It does not say what was in that building.
Exactly, and it was 47 stories high, and it collapsed within 10 seconds. And the video's on YouTube, so just go look at it yourself.
Free fall speed. Everybody out there right now, YouTube, WTC, the number 7, and just watch as many videos as you can. Do not let cognitive dissonance set in. Everyone knows what cognitive dissonance is who's ever taken a basic communications media course in, you know, at a major university like I did. I happen to be a communications major, a history minor, graduated with a bachelor's degree, and frankly, it wasn't worth it other than the friends that I met and, of course, you know, my wife that I married. But the education itself versus the student loans, that's a whole other topic. But when you take that basic communications course, you learn a term that's called cognitive dissonance. And what that means is if the media or the message that you're seeing or hearing or experiencing challenges your existing belief system, you may or may not even let it enter your psyche because it's too painful to analyze everything you've ever known. So if I was to tell you that the sky was purple instead of blue, even if the sky was purple, if you believed it was blue, you might not even see that it's purple because of the cognitive dissonance, the comfort that you would lose by having to reanalyze your belief system. Better example. There's examples in married couples where the man will come home from work and the wife will be in bed with another man and the guy will walk in and they'll be having an affair and the guy will go downstairs and just make a sandwich as if nothing ever happened. It's simply too painful for him to realize what he just saw. And that's what 9/11
is. Instead of saying the sky is purple, what if I said the sky is full of chemtrails and there they are? You know,
well, I'd call you a conspiracy.
I've seen people, I've seen people look at a sky full of chemtrails and tell me that it's normal.
I've had well-off people. Mike, I've had a billionaire look up at chemtrails and tell me that it's normal.
It's very frustrating. Now, as I mentioned, we have TNT News. We have our own news service on this radio station. And every once in a while, there's an article about Colorado. And why don't you start with the Denver airport? Why don't you describe it and what's so different or unusual about it? I know a lot of it is underground.
Well, one thing that's so fascinating about Denver Airport is it's a solid 10 miles or so from Denver itself. You know, part of the reason for that, people could say, is, well, it was inexpensive to build, you know, way away, you know, the land was cheap, you know, or they could, you know, monopolize on all the hotels and so on in the area, which may have something to do with its existence. But, I mean, Jesse Ventura's television show, Conspiracy Theory, did cover the Denver airport and a lot of the weird, unusual aspects about it. It's always under construction. They're always moving tons and tons of dirt that you just never know where those tunnels are going. So, you know, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about what you know, and then I'll probably fill in the blanks. But I do frequent that airport. I do. There's a lot of things that just feel wrong and weird about it on like kind of a gut level. I mean, the Bronco that's out in front has red eyes. He's blue with red eyes, and he's reared up in like an attack position. And when you drive by it, it's just kind of eerie. The murals in the airport are pretty easy to find. You could just Google Denver Airport murals, and you'll see the one of the fascist stabbing the white dove. You know, he looks something out of Stalin's Russia or Hitler's Germany. There's all these children of different races and colors and ethnicities in the back crying. And it's just kind of, you know, we could talk about all
the
detail.
The children are in coffins.
Correct. You're right. Thanks for reminding me. They are in coffins.
I mean, this isn't a public airport, you know. We're used to, like, pictures of flowers and vases in airports, you know.
Yeah, there is also kind of miniaturized you know a little bit more about South American cultures, you know, whether it was the Mayans or the Aztecs, but there are miniaturized cities like that, and we know that those people were into human sacrifice and so on. There are gargoyles throughout the airport that are standing in suitcases, and I believe that the general idea is that those trains that you have to get on, they're little subway style trains, and you get on them in one side of the airport and they take you all the way to the concourses where you actually would board your flight. But the word on the street, if you will, is that those, as you go through there, there's all these different exits and things that could take you other places, and you just don't know. You know, they're going really fast. So I know that Jesse Ventura's Conspiracy Theory show got into a lot of this in much greater depth, and I do recommend listeners YouTube Jesse Ventura Conspiracy Theory DIA or Denver Airport.
Well, I'm going to go really deep with you and the listeners right now. There's a guy named Phil Schneider. He was an engineer. He worked on the airport. He said there's seven levels down below, and it's going to be a place where the New World Order elites can be safe and can hide out. Now, he gave one or two lectures about the New World Order and about reptilian aliens underground, and then he died. He was killed. And you can look at his, Phil Schneider, you can look at his lecture on YouTube. So I'm going to throw that in.
I'm glad you threw that out, you know, because I am open to learning more. I'm not familiar with Bill Schneider, but I do respect you as a researcher.
Well, when a researcher dies, I always pay real close attention to what they're saying. Gary Webb, you know, he wrote a book about drugs coming into the cities through the CIA. He died right after his book was published.
Is he the one who shot himself in the head twice?
Twice, yeah. How do you do that? How do you pull the trigger twice?
Yeah, I don't know how you pull the trigger the second time after, you know, the first bullet goes into your brain.
Well,
but,
I shouldn't laugh. That's terrible. Yeah, but no, it's true. But he did write a book, and one newspaper carried his story. It just goes to show you there's holes in the dam sometimes, and a California paper ran that story. So there's a lot more about Colorado. What's this about the state splitting off and North Colorado becoming a state?
Well, I've learned a bit about this from the mainstream media. I haven't really heard anything on the inside, even though I do work in the county that is leading this charge, which is Weld County. Weld County is near Larimer County. It's northeast of Denver. And from what I've read, 80%+ of all oil and gas that comes out of the entire state of Colorado comes from Weld County. Now, Weld County has a very large percentage of the state's farms and gas and oil production. Almost all of the beef and leather, et cetera, comes from Weld County. I mean, for example, my wife's brother's wife's dad, so I could figure out what that means in in-law words, but he buys all the leather from this big, huge cow factory, for lack of a better word, that, you know, raises the cattle and slaughters them, and the beef, of course, becomes food, and the leather, of course, it's made in, you know, gets sent to China and made into handbags and shoes and belts, et cetera, and shipped all over the world. So anyway, from many angles, I know that Weld County is essentially wealthy. So basically, to make a long story short, the wealthy, gun-owning, Americana of the state of Colorado, many of them are in Weld County. They're in many of the other 10 counties that are essentially trying to create their own state, and they want to call it North Colorado.
I'm hoping they'll break away from Washington. I'm hoping they'll break away from Washington, D.C., and be an independent state. And I'd like to see the state start to break off.
You know, I think they're more concerned right now, just from what I've read, with being broken off from Denver. They do not feel represented at all by the politicians down there. The main points has to do with green energy requirements for them and taxation without representation, especially when it comes to the gun laws. Colorado has passed a magazine limit of 15 rounds per magazine. Well, anybody who knows anything about guns knows that the AR-15 is probably the most common, what the establishment likes to call an assault rifle. You know, I mean, you know, are we going to call a hammer an assault hammer when a hammer is used to hurt somebody, or a assault vehicle when someone runs over a bunch of people? How about an assault axe? Maybe we'll just, you know, maybe you have to be like, you know, 21 years old and pass a background check, you know, to buy an axe from Home Depot if it's ever used in an assault. We'll call them assault axes. But all joking aside, Weld County, which is where I work, which is really where I read the mainstream, in general, lying newspaper, they are just fed up with what Denver and the rest of Colorado is doing. But really, it's Denver being the hub. You know, it's like the Los Angeles or the Orange County of the whole state, you know, or the San Francisco, like, you know, to relate it to California, which is where, of course, I'm from. So
People listening probably are confused. They probably can't figure out if we're Democrats or Republicans. But what people need to understand is we're patriots and we're fighting the New World Order. So we're actually trying to keep the United States an independent, sovereign nation with local representation, and we don't want the U.S. to turn into an economic zone. And so we've had a paradigm shift. We don't think crossways, Democrat versus Republican. We're shifting to Patriot versus New World Order, correct?
Exactly. It's like Jesse Ventura's book, Democrips and Rebloodlicans. You know, it's two gangs, and they both essentially serve the same purpose, which is to hold up the existing power structure. So once you understand that, the labels don't mean anything. You know, the best analogy I've ever heard of a politician is a birdcage liner. You know, the bird goes to the bathroom on the newspaper, and that newspaper is, say, President Obama right now. And that fecal matter of the bird is starting to pile up, and the room is really starting to stink. Well, they're going to pull out that Obama birdcage liner, and they're going to throw it in the trash, and then they're going to put in a new birdcage liner, most likely a Republican this time, and the system or the cycle will start over again.
Well, what's interesting is that the Bilderbergs, all these secret groups, they really hate the middle class in America. They hate an educated, intelligent middle class. And during the 1990s was about pulling jobs out of America, right? NAFTA and GATT. Now it's about pulling low-wage workers into America. If this amnesty goes through, these 11 million people, they will replace the $15 an hour jobs, and they will come in and take your job and work for minimum wage. That's what this is about.
Along with the prison industrial complex. So when they catch your son or daughter who's dumb enough to use the drugs that they ship in, they will put them in prison, and they'll work for 25 cents an hour, continuing to drive the wage down. It's a pincher attack, in military terms, being used between the illegal immigrants and the prison labor.
And once again, going back to NAFTA, it's so sad that so many of our factory towns had their main factory close, and the work went elsewhere. It went to other countries. That was all done by design. The New World Order wants to break apart the heartland of the USA. They simply don't want it to exist.
They are deathly afraid of a thinking middle class, and they're afraid of the family. You know, they're trying to destroy us on every single level. They want the family to be broken so nobody will stick up for anybody else as they take us away to whatever their plan is. I mean, we know what that looks like. But in general, Mike, and I know you know this, but for the listeners out there that are on the fence, it's an age-old system. Tyranny is always going to take hold. I mean, I heard on Alex Jones today, and this was a great example. He said, if you have water that stays a constant 100 degrees and you add various living organisms, I mean, you're going to get amoebas growing in there and all kinds of things. Well, if you take Arctic water that's at, you know, 31 degrees Fahrenheit or you know, whatever, nothing's going to grow in it. It simply can't. So freedom and liberty is the ether at which more freedom and liberty grows. And then as soon as you raise it up to essentially 100-degree water, everything's going to grow in it, and it's going to turn into this nasty swampland, and that's essentially what they're doing to America. They're turning us into the environment in which they can grow, which is monopolies and oligopolies. And, I mean, look at energy. I know you know this, but, I mean, you're telling me that a Toyota Corolla in 1985 got 35 miles to the gallon on the highway, and now here in 2013, a Toyota Corolla gets 35 miles to the gallon. You're telling me in, what, 28 years or whatever that is, we can't...
No improvement in technology, nothing. And, you know, we had electric cars in the 1990s. Remember that movie, Who Killed the Electric Car?
I own it. I got it from Robin's store there, that same store that I got the
Thank you. And now, finally, hybrids are starting to come out a bit more. But, you know, there's cars that run on alcohol. There's cars that run on grease. There's cars that run on water. The technology's there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, hydrogen's the most abundant gas on the planet.
Now let's play this out. Can a reporter who works for the New York Times break a front page story that cars run on alcohol? Can a reporter do that right now?
No. That's what the whole national security apparatus is really about.
No, you can't. So because of this this lock on the mainstream media, but luckily so many people get their news now on the internet.
Yeah, the dinosaur media is totally dying. They're like a bunch of rats, like scurrying for, you know, the top seat on the Titanic as it sinks
Titanic.
Through the water. And
right. Now, I've heard the ratings for like CNN are like under a million, way under a million. I mean, Alex Jones, I'm sure, has a much bigger audience than CNN.
No, we're taking back this country, and we're going to take back the world. We've lived in this paradigm long enough, and it's over.
And, you know, you and I don't come from fear at all. We're not fear-mongering. We're speaking lucidly, clearly, with power and intent. You and I are sounding exactly like Alex Jones. When you get this information, you take back your power.
Exactly. You know, and Mark Twain said, in the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man, brave and hated and scorned. However, in time, when his cause succeeds, the timid will join him, for then it'll cost nothing to be a patriot. What that means to me is that basically everybody's kind of wishy-washy as the tyranny is not so obvious. You know, hey, you know, there's a ball game on tonight, or hey, there's these girls and they're fun to party with, or, you know, we got this to do or that to do. You know, shut up about that conspiracy stuff. You know, I mean, why you got to be so negative, you know? And then sure enough, 5 years later, when everyone's getting hauled away to a concentration camp, now everybody's a patriot, because at that point you have nothing to lose. Well, we need people that are willing to fight the fight now, you know, while we still have a media, while we still have freedom of speech and a first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth amendment. You know, it's not, we need people that, and those people will be blessed by God, the universe, the spirit, whatever you want to call it. If you are willing to sacrifice today when there is another alternative reality you can choose to live in, then you are the person that Mark Twain was talking about, which is, you know, in the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man. You know, he's brave, but he's hated and scorned because people want you to shut up.
They do. And let me ask you about Michael Hastings. He was a reporter for Rolling Stone. He died in a car crash. Apparently you researched this. Why don't you give us some information on Michael Hastings?
Sure. Michael Hastings was embedded in Iraq with a guy named Sergeant Biggs. This has been on the Alex Jones Show for the last couple weeks. Now, Michael Hastings was known for bringing down General Stanley McChrystal. He wrote an article about him that was so damning that it literally ended his career. Now, that's what I've heard, and I've heard it from legit sources. So, you know, like on the Alex Jones Show. Now, if Alex Jones was saying things like that and was incorrect, he'd be immediately sued. He does have a $7 million a year operation. Don't you think if he was libeling people, they would bring him down? So moving on from the validity of what I just said, research it yourself. Michael Hastings was emailing, he was tweeting WikiLeaks, and he was emailing his friends, including that Sergeant Biggs I was telling you about, who he was embedded with. 82nd Airborne, I believe, is what he's a part of. But he was saying that he was on to his biggest story ever, and that it was he needed to go into hiding. He was being followed. He knew that this was a huge story and that he had had his life threatened many times, and he needed to get this out. But he needed to go into hiding. And his 2012 Mercedes C-Class exploded while driving down Highland Avenue in Los Angeles. Now, they said he crashed into a tree, of course, but when you look at the damage in the vehicle and the photographs and you look at the tree, it's just not, it doesn't really make sense to me. Now, the other piece of damning evidence in this case is the motor. The motor of his vehicle was found. You know, I've heard reports somewhere between 60 feet to 300 feet. You know, I've heard, but it definitely was not attached to the car anymore, and it definitely was off at a right angle in one of the directions. So I don't know how a 2012 Mercedes crashes into a tree and somehow the engine, you know, flies away. I mean, come on. That sounds like... It just doesn't make sense. So, and then when you look at the picture,
No, it doesn't. But do you have any idea what the story was he was working on?
You know, the only thing I've heard, which is on Alex Jones via Sergeant Biggs, is it had to do with the CIA.
Okay, and you know, the NSA story broke. It sure is interesting how the media has dropped the NSA story, haven't they?
Yeah, this whole Trayvon and Zimmerman thing has really done a great job of not only race dividing this country, or at least they seem to be failing at it. You know, I wanted to ask you, Mike, don't you think it's a little bit suspicious that that verdict was released on Saturday night?
That was a terrible time to release it. Well, let me tell you something about Paula Deen. Let me tell you something, okay? That story on Paula Deen broke a year ago. Did you know that the media brought it up again right as the trial was ending? Do you know that's an old story?
Wow. No, I was not aware that. I knew it was being used
That lawsuit was from spring of 2012. That was public. I heard about that over a year ago. The media brought it up as the trial was winding down.
Wow.
Why else would they recycle an old story? If someone out has some explanation, I would like to hear it, but isn't that, it's sinister. But the media can play all kinds of games. They can bury a story. They can hold a story back. They can break a story again. They can play a story up or ignore it. It's up to them.
And that's what they do. And that's how dumb they think most people are.
And, whatever she did, this court case was from a year ago, and the timing's very suspicious to me. And I think we have to mention at this point the Council on Foreign Relations, because this is a group that strongly influences the media in the U.S., the CFR.
Certainly. We all know the CFR has unbelievable influence as well as the Bilderberg Group. I mean, these are things that were said to not exist, but all you got to do is just YouTube Dick Cheney, Council on Foreign Relations, and he'll be joking to his insiders about how he didn't mention that he was a part of that group when he ran for re-election in Wyoming. Ha, 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 inside laugh, you know. But, hey, Mike, I'll change the subject real quick before we run out of time here.
No, we're okay on time. And we're the last show. We're okay on time.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Northern Colorado is a big part of Agenda 21. Have you ever seen the Agenda 21?
Oh, God, explain. Please explain Agenda 21. It's horrendous.
Well, simply put, they're just trying to crowd us into compact cities and make all of the wonderful natural lands places where humans can't go. I mean, if you want to talk
about...
They're
going to fence it off.
Feudalism.
Yeah, fence it off.
Yeah, feudal lords, you know.
Now, I understand they're changing the zoning laws out in the country and the suburbs.
Well, it started a long time ago with not allowing people to have mineral rights on their land. You know, they'd say, well, you can make your land a nature preserve, and then we won't tax it, and we won't, we promise not to build next to you and all that. But then you don't get to tap the oil and gas in your land, you know, which is a big difference between Larimer County and Weld County. So this whole thing is sophisticated. You know, I always tell people, if you're trying to understand how the elite work, it's like three or four chessboards stacked on top of each other. You know, imagine trying to watch out for a knight or a rook or a bishop, you know, killing your knight, rook, or bishop, or a king or queen or whatever, when, you know, they're moving from the top chessboard all the way down to the bottom chessboard. I mean, it's a very sophisticated game. But here in Northern Colorado, we're
Agenda
seeing,
21,
we're seeing
that goes back to 1992, the Rio Summit, when Bush and Clinton signed us into Agenda 21.
Yeah, you're right. And from my research, it's gone back even further than that, and I wish I had my papers in front of me for that. But it's an age-old dream of the elite to, you know, fly over us in their helicopters and, you know, potentially more futuristic aircraft down the road that we know they have now, but we won't get into that. But back to Agenda 21 here, smart meters have just hit my neighborhood, for example. You know, they're changing out all of the analog meters, and they even have digital meters that look like smart meters, but they don't necessarily broadcast what your power usage is. Well, the people in the city limits have already gotten them, and the people out of the city limits are now being given them. Now, here's an example. If you do not agree to have their smart meter, you pay between an extra $10 or $15 a month to have someone come read your meter, they say. So they're not giving a discount to the people that get the smart meter. It's not like if you get it, you get $10 or $15 off your bill, you know, because someone doesn't have to come out and read your meter. But if you do decline the meter, you have to pay an extra $10 to $15 every month so that you don't have this smart meter. Now, whenever they say the word smart, just think tyrannical spying device that radiates you and your family. I mean,
exactly.
They love to use doublespeak. It's Orwellian, you know, oh, it's
now,
a smart meter. Why would you not want a smart meter? Aren't you smart?
Exactly. Now, when I was in Portland, they were tearing down single-family homes. The United Nations believes a single-family home is wasteful, and they were putting up two houses on a lot, very narrow, small houses. And zoning was favoring this change, and that is a part of Agenda 21. Cars and homes are wasteful, is what they say.
Yes, and that's why, you know, down the road we're going to see more and more automated cars, more and more. I mean, Google already has them. Just research that. And it'll be safer, of course, and cars are dangerous, you know, but you know, it'd be pretty safe if we all lived in a prison, right? You know, that's always the joke. You know, you see the comic book strip that makes you laugh, which is, you know, a family is all in jail and they're all eating dinner around a table together inside a jail cell, and they go, oh, I'm so relaxed, I'm finally safe from all the guns and drugs and whatever. You know, it's like, at what point do you quit giving up your liberty to receive
freedom
security
at,
you know, as Ben Franklin
freedom
says,
freedom at point zero. But so you're saying in Colorado they're pushing people off their ranches and the suburbs into the city. Is that what they're doing right now?
Well, there's all kinds of criminal activity going on. But rather than get into specifics, I'd just like to generalize, which is it's getting tougher and tougher for the average farm to make it. You know, water prices are going up. The crops are not bringing much money right now at market, and you have to grow GMO, or you have to pay for all these pesticides, or you have to, you know, pass all the organic certifications, and, you know, you got to put a $2 tag on a $5 chicken. And I mean, there's just, by design, all the farming has just gotten really tough for these people. And so they are, with the cost of fuel and the cost of you know, the dollar collapsing, essentially most farmers are just, they have no choice but to get closer to town. And the closer you get to town, the more expensive the land gets, and the taxation and so on. So, I mean, it's not so much on every level that some local, you know, mob boss is kicking you off your land as much as it's tricky, you know, it's slick, it's done with lawyers, and it's done through lawyer speak, and, you know, oh, well, that area over there is an eco preserve, you know. I mean, it's just like the national parks. I mean, how many people out there are aware that, you know, most national parks have been signed over essentially as collateral for the dollar to the Chinese?
No, I had no idea. But Agenda 21 is about real estate agents and politicians and city council meetings changing the zoning laws and making it harder and harder to do things with your land. You know, Aaron, we could go on and on. You're fantastic. I'm going to have you on another time. But Aaron, I really appreciate you on Odyssey tonight, and we'll talk to you soon, okay? Have a good night.